So often we get fixated that this is my sole purpose, this is the only thing I'm here to do. And sometimes it truly is for some people. But in my own experience and what I've seen in other people is that it wants to continue to grow, it wants to continue to evolve. So by approaching our purpose from a place of impermanence or non-attachment actually allows for more to come through. And it allows us to be an ever-evolving being, which is truly what we are at the end of the day, right? We're given this one life, but it's a life that's attached to many others, and we're here to connect and inspire with other people.
Hello, my name is Wing, and welcome to A Work in Purpose. Do you see people who are living their purpose and wondering, how did they get there? Are you wondering, what is your purpose too? Me too. That is why I'm inviting you to join me on this journey. A Work in Purpose is our podcast for igniting and reaching our purpose together. Each week, I'll be sharing an episode of me interviewing people from all walks of life who are working towards some kind of purpose, whether it is with their career, volunteering, creativity, spiritual practices, or just how they approach everyday life. We'll dive deep into their stories to uncover what obstacles they had to overcome to reach their purpose today. By hearing their stories, I hope you will learn from their journey and be inspired so you too can become a work in purpose. Many of us don't get anywhere near our full potential because we often play small our entire life. We often hold on to limiting beliefs about ourselves that bind us inside our comfortable little box, forever wondering if there exists more life outside our self-imposed box. Our guest this episode, Devriah Raw, is a change catalyst who helps people transform their lives by getting them out of the play small mindset. In this episode, Devriah will talk about the four pillars of leadership, power, potential, purpose, and pleasure, and how we can build and strengthen each of those pillars so we can become the greatness we are capable of being and live out our purpose. Devriah shares a lot of practical actions we can take, as well as a lot of deep spiritual wisdom. He also talks about how a pivotal tragic event in his family led him on a spiritual journey that ignited his purpose today. So let's get started. Hey, Devriah. Hi. Welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start. So you call yourself a change catalyst for emerging leaders to realize their full potential and purpose. Can you tell us more about what you mean by change catalyst?
Yeah, definitely. So being a catalyst is somebody who is able to ignite change and not be affected by that initial change. So a lot of the work that I do around, you know, psychic work, healing, coaching, all of these different mediums, my main premise is to really create an opportunity for people to realize their true essence, to tap into their power and their gifts and skills. And through that, sometimes it can be a little bit of a disruptive pattern that comes up, right? We're all learning in this beautiful journey together. And so part of the work that I do is to really remove myself from becoming attached to a person's story and to offer outside perspective for them to claim their true essence.
Very interesting. Can you tell us more about your approach for how you do that? I know that you follow this four pillars of leadership that includes power, potential, purpose, and pleasure. Can you tell us more about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we're looking at ways that we can really activate ourselves, right? All of us have unique gifts and skills to offer the world, right? There is plenty of space for all of us to just show up in our fullness. And an element of what I've recently come to embody within myself is understanding what my personal essence is. And that includes the essence of observance as well as the essence of expression. So part of what I do is being able to take a step back and observe the greater energy that is happening, whether it be with a one-on-one client or a group coaching session, or for that matter, different dynamics in professional atmospheres. And so when I'm able to observe and see that, I'm able to articulate and see potential spaces where people are not in their power. And from that place, we can invite in the form of expression, whether it be through movement or communication. Communication, of course, being very important in today's day and age, especially in the digital world that we live in. And from that place, part of the four pillars that you are mentioning here is these are basically my primary channels that I have learned within myself that have helped me activate my own essence and my own power. So the first one is power. And what I am referring to when I'm speaking of power is tapping into those energy centers in our body that just make us feel so good and so alive. And that power is really like this magnetic charge, this energy that we feel that gives us a reason to be like, ah, yeah, I'm alive and I'm here. And from that place, it moves in. So we activate our power and then we move into our potential. And the potential is kind of the space between actualizing something in the world, right? So the power state is very internal. It's feeling really good and juiced up in your body. And then the potential is realizing that, oh, I can do something with that power that I feel. And so when we begin to discover what our potential is, it's kind of a visionary state, right? You might start mind mapping all of these ideas that you have or these dreams and these aspirations that you've held onto for years or that you're just discovering right now. And then that's what we distill into our purpose. And our purpose is really that core essence of why we are here and what we do in the world, right? So it's how we share all of these gifts and skills and that power and potential with the world is by showing up in our purpose. And from that place, once we've established, you know, at least a small framework or like a light foundation to what that purpose might be, it's bringing that purpose into a state of pleasure. And traditionally in the business world or in a lot of different industries, pleasure is something that we don't talk about. And at the end of the day, we all have sexual energy. We all have creative energy. We all have life force, right? We know what pleasure is, but do we actually know how to embody pleasure and bring that into our soul purpose or into our life's work? And, you know, there's a lot of different pieces here that we have to discover and have access to. But that's how I kind of break down these four pillars. It's really about, you know, feeling the power in your body, discovering and remembering that you have potential to create, then locking it into a purpose, and then finding the pleasure in embodying all of that together as one.
Wow, that sounds very interesting and fascinating. I'd like to maybe dive deeper into each one of those facets. So let's start with power. How do you help people to realize the power they have inside with themselves? And what can people do to realize it for themselves too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really important piece. So much of our world tells us to play small, right? So much of the societal conditions that we have been born into, different cultural influences, there's a lot of different variables that actually teach us at an early age to diminish our power, to kind of conform to the societal norms, to play within different social constructs. And when we really begin to open up our power, it's basically, it's just remembering that there is only one you in this world. There will ever only be one you in this world. And that alone is a state of power. And it's something that we need to celebrate and claim for ourselves, because the more that we can move into this power state, it's not power in a dominant kind of context. It's actually power as a way of feeling our energy become more and more full and established in our body. And when we're looking at energetic healing, the premise of power is so that it actually overflows out into the interactions that we have outside of our inner state. And so when we tap into that power and when we realize it, and ways that we can nurture it include a lot of, you know, self-inquiry, right? It's getting clear on that inner dialogue. And if we're in a self-sabotage state, or if we're feeding that one-sided of the wolf energy, right? You know, it's the two wolf images, right? What wolf are you feeding? And as said, our society, our culture, our world inherently has told us and programmed us to more or less play small. But we're not here to play small. That's not why we were born. That's not what we're here to cultivate. That's not the transformative network that we're all beginning to wake up to and realize. And the more that we nurture that other wolf, that wolf that is aware, that wolf that is very present in being powerful, it's not in a way to dominate other people, but it's actually a way to inspire and encourage other people that they too are powerful in their own right.
What are some like practical techniques people can use to nurture this wolf within themselves?
Yeah, so oftentimes we can catch ourselves in inner narratives. And I really love to remind people, I recently just got into the book that's called The Big Leap, and it's written by Gay Hendricks. And it's a really, really powerful book. First of all, if you're wanting to tap into anything to do with power, that's my go-to right now. I'm just reading it myself. And he talks about the upper limit. And more or less, when we are trying to activate our power, we might have a beautiful opportunity that presents itself. We might, you know, create a beautiful connection with somebody or be presented a new opportunity, whether it be through work or play or whatever it might be. And oftentimes when we feel this ecstatic moment, we counteract it somewhere else in our life. So we kind of create this dissonance within ourselves. And more often than not, it creates that inner narrative, that inner cognitive dissonance. So when you're trying to step into your power, it really has to come back to your center. What is that inner conversation that you're having with yourself? And can you catch yourself if you are limiting your own power? Are you telling yourself that you don't deserve something or that you need to play small to not express fully? And one of the ways outside of just doing that inner self-dialogue check is to move your body. So if you feel like you are in a disempowered state, locate where that emotion or sensation is actually located in your body. So if I'm to give an example, maybe it's that you're not speaking your truth and that you feel resistance in your throat. And if you can feel that you feel that disempowerment in the throat, how can you begin to communicate that out? So maybe it's going to be as simple as taking really nice deep breaths into your body, letting out a few sighs or a few animal sounds, just letting your energy move, and then getting clear that that is actually a way for you to reclaim your power. So that's just one example. Some other kind of overarching guidelines that I would say for people is if you're really wanting to tap into your power, get really clear on how you are showing up for yourself in the forms of meditation, in the forms of movement, as well as music. And music can be either that you're singing or that you're dancing and you're just shaking off all that steam and extra energy in your body. And to come back into the center of your being, that's the easiest way to come back to your power.
Wow. Thank you. And what about the next pillar, potential? How can people find their potential and what techniques should they use?
So potential, as I was talking about before, it's kind of the space between, right? It's the space between your power and your purpose. So when we're looking at energy work, I myself, I'm a certified Reiki master. I've been practicing that modality for a number of years now. And when we are looking at how we build energy in the body, we actually typically rub our palms together and we stimulate friction. And when we begin to pull our hands away or we begin to move that energy, what you begin to realize is it's the space between that is where the energy is being held. And this is exactly what our potential is. It's that space between. It's the moment between kind of feeling the power, feeling those visions start to come through, and then actualizing it and bringing it into a tangible reality, right? A tangible action. So ways that we can continue to tap into our potential is really going into that creative process. So you might be shaking off that steam when you're doing, you know, body work or moving your body or meditating. But then from that place, how can you begin to create the vision for yourself? What do you see in yourself, in your life? What are your gifts and skills? Can you call them forth? Can you begin to see them? Can you begin to dream what your life could be like if you created something other than what you're currently living? And that's really what potential is all about. It's getting clear and and having fun in getting clear, right? Creative visioning is supposed to be enjoyable. There's supposed to be joy and ecstasy in that experience. So if you catch yourself in that self-dialogue that might be a little bit more negative or a bit more dense, how can you raise it up? And how can you tap into that potential? So as you're beginning to create those visions, can you begin to bring them down into something? Can you write a letter to yourself? Right? Can you write a letter to your future self? This is where I am a year from now. Or can you create a vision board for yourself? Can you record voice memos where you're actually just speaking affirmations to yourself and reminding yourself of your own potential? And from that place, the more that you can bring those visions into a little bit of a tangible form, that's what starts to land the potential into the purpose. And so that's kind of where that segue connects.
Cool. Yeah. I've started doing like a current me, future me sort of comparison vision board this year. And so far, it's like, oh yeah, I'm making good progress with now that I visualize what my potential could be. So I really like that technique. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So now let's move on to purpose.
Yeah. So purpose is where all of that, you know, energy starts to actualize. It starts to become more tangible, right? When we're kind of talking about business practices or even some coaching practices, it's what are the action steps that you can take for yourself, right? So you move through all of that power and you feel really good and in your body, and then you bring it into a visionary state. And then maybe you start to distill that into a vision board or writing letters to yourself and just calling forth your future self. And then from there, you don't want to just leave it there. You want to make a tangible action. You want to do something right now, right? If I could snap my fingers and you hear that, what is it that I can do right here, right now to begin to embody that purpose? And typically too, between the potential and the purpose state, there is a distillation process that happens. So in our visionary process, it's like, let your dreams run wild. I want to make $1 million and I want to live in a house and I want to, you know, experience this opportunity and that thing and the other. And you just let it all come out of your being. And then you want to distill that and really find some nice core pieces. So if it's that you want to live in a house and have $1 million, what you're really trying to cultivate is abundance, right? So that's kind of your core theme and your purpose, is that you're here to awaken abundance for people, or that you want to really help coach people and help them realize their full, you know, self. Part of that is distilling it down to the purpose is that you want to be a leader and you want to inspire other people, right? So it's taking all of that beautiful visionary state, distilling it down into something that is a lot more kind of bite-sized. Typically too, it's going to be a bit more simple. Simple language is easier to manifest, right? We can get very creative in our languaging, but if you can break that down and come back to a simple practice and a simple thing that you can embody, then that's how you begin to awaken your purpose. And that being said, outside of the whole visionary process, what is it that you are gifted and skilled at? Go back into who you were as a child. What were the things that you naturally did? Did you naturally lead other children in games? Or did you naturally observe spaces around you? Typically, we can ask for other insight from external means. So our family or our friends, and we can even communicate with friends in our present day if we haven't known them since an early age, and just ask them, what do you think of when you think of me, right? And just allow that external reflection to also provide an internal reflection around what your purpose might be. And don't become attached to what your purpose is, because we are ever-changing and ever-evolving beings. So you might lock in that my purpose is to help unlock abundance for people. Okay, that's great. But then maybe you do begin to unlock abundance, and then you remember and discover something else that is another element of your purpose. And so those are just a few fun ways and practical ways that you can begin to distill that visionary state into tangible action pieces for yourself.
Do you think that finding your purpose, the current one, is kind of like being on a river where it kind of just unflows into a different one that you might not even think about, but they just naturally flow from one another because that's just what maybe your grand purpose is, you know, at currently, you just can't even imagine it yet, right? What's your take on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, life is a river. Everything needs to be fluid. The moment that we attach ourselves to a rigid structure is the moment that we limit ourselves. So let yourself enjoy the ride, right? Jump on that boat, whatever that boat might be, right? Maybe you're riding that boat of abundance, and that's kind of the purpose that you're choosing right now. And then maybe that boat only leads you partway down the river and it brings you to the shore. And then you get off and you embody that and you feel great. And then suddenly you realize, oh, there's a new boat there. Oh, there's a bit more to the journey. Okay, better jump down the river. And you're not forgetting that initial purpose. You're choosing to welcome in more into your life experience. And so it is allowing this space for opportunity to continue to show up, because so often we get fixated that this is my sole purpose. This is the only thing I'm here to do. And sometimes it truly is for some people. But in my own experience and what I've seen in other people is that it wants to continue to grow. It wants to continue to evolve. So by approaching our purpose from a place of impermanence or non-attachment actually allows for more to come through. And it allows us to be an ever-evolving being, which is truly what we are at the end of the day, right? We're given this one life, but it's a life that's attached to many others. And we're here to connect and inspire with other people. So, you know, we need to take that and enjoy that process of riding the river and seeing what life presents us each and every day.
Great. On another hand, how do you, let's say you are on the river towards one purpose, what would be a sign that you're not getting distracted or procrastinating or just going back to your bad habits by following this other direction? How do you tell the two apart?
Mm-hmm. The number one word to remember in that state is discernment. Do you trust yourself? Have you created a firm foundation within your body, within your own intuition, within that inner dialogue, to then use your process of discernment to understand if that's a distraction or if that is just a new part of your adventure, right? And it's kind of it's a really important piece to acknowledge, because so often, especially if you're a creative individual, and I can speak for myself, I love creating 100 projects and not seeing any of them through. You know, I have many ideas, right? But that's actually me just being stuck in my potential state. That's not me dropping into my purpose state. So, you know, in business context, we call it gold plating. Pick one thing and allow all of those other ideas to still have a place, but gold plate them. And what that means is you put them off to the side, you're not forgetting about them, but you're making a conscious choice to choose that one thing for yourself, or maybe it's a couple of things, and you see them through until your discernment tells you it's time to welcome in something else. And maybe it's something that you put on that gold plate, or maybe it's something new that's been presented to you down the river of life. So yeah, it's, you know, and ways that we can get clear on our discernment is this filling my vessel up? Do I feel full in pursuing this new thing on top of the original thing that I was creating? Is it inspiring me? And also, is it being received by other people, right? Because if there is a friction point and it's not being received, then it's okay to just let it go, right? We need to be in a state of impermanence. We're an ever evolving, our life is ever evolving. This is a journey that's ever evolving, right? So does come back to that point of simplicity. And if you feel anything in your body that's saying no, then that's your body not consenting to that being welcomed in, right? And that all comes back to that process of discernment.
How do you develop that trust to listen to your body and your inner voice? I feel like many people might have a negative relationship. They might have a lot of fear and anxiety that tells them the wrong thing. So how do you get to the stage where you know you're at the right state of mind to listen to your inner voice and body?
Definitely. Yeah. And you touched base on a really key word there, which is fear. And I love this word. It is a challenge word for many people. And basically for myself, I choose to describe fear in three different ways. So the first way to describe fear is that you're choosing to forget everything and run. Notice how that was F-E-A-R, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first context of how we respond to fear. We forget everything and run. You drop it all and you just, you go back to your comfort zone. Or you can make that choice to forgive everything and reconcile, right? And what that means is if you're moving through a fear response, then that state of forgiveness is really going to be the number one thing that allows you to come back to your center and to reconcile everything, coming back to that neutral point. And the third way that we describe fear, for some reason, it's actually being blocked from my memory right now. So let me just see if I can call that back in. Yeah, there we go. Okay. So it's to face everything and rise. Mm-hmm. So it's the process of realizing that, okay, I feel that fear response. I don't quite know if I can trust myself, but am I going to rise to the occasion of facing it? Am I going to rise to that opportunity, right? And really hold it. And the more that we can do that, the more that we can create practices that create trust in our own body outside of anything else outside of ourselves, the more that we actually welcome in the opportunity for our body to communicate its truth to our soul, right? So once again, that fear response is either forgetting everything and running, forgiving everything and reconciling, or to face everything and rise up. And this isn't, there's no formula for this. There's no way that you can possibly be like, okay, if I just do step one and step two, I'm going to end up at that amazing step three. It really comes in by being willing to make mistakes, to be human, to be imperfect, to move through things that maybe are uncomfortable, and to really just ask yourself the question, am I willing to trust myself? Right? So anytime that we are unwilling, it once again goes back to the practice of consent. And sometimes we need to honor that. If our body's saying no, then maybe that isn't a project that we're supposed to do right now. Maybe that's something that we are supposed to put on the back burner or gold plate and save for later. And when in doubt, coming back to the premise of moving our bodies, when in doubt, shake it out. So if you feel like you can't quite trust yourself, or you're in a fear response, or you don't quite know how to move past that block that you might be experiencing, how can you be shaking up your life in a healthy way? So it's not about creating drama or creating all of this stuff to try and, cause chaos, but it's being intentional about shaking your energy. So maybe it's creating a different morning routine for yourself, or, you get home from work, or you get home from a project you've done, and you intentionally set aside half an hour to shake your body, like actually shake, because so often we forget that we are also animals. We have primal intelligence in ourselves. And what's the number one thing that animals do when they experience trauma or they experience fear? The number one thing that they do is they shake their body. They release that energy. They shake out the stagnancy, and then they come back to their center. So that's definitely how I would answer your question.
Great. Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you. And let's move on to the last pillar, pleasure.
So pleasure. This is one that a lot of people, when we're moving through the system, this is where a lot of intimidation typically will show up. Mm. And the reason for this is because we've been told to not feel too much pleasure. We can feel a little bit of pleasure. We can feel a little bit of joy, but don't take it too far. That's no. You got to stay a little bit subdued to fit in the societal construct, to fit in the social norm. But when we actually break through from that experience, when we move beyond that into a state of pleasure, what we are telling our bodies is that we are 100% safe. And by being in our pleasure and by being in our joy, we welcome in the opportunity to have that energy really overflow into the world around us, into all of the connections that we make, into the work that we do, into the creative projects that we're a part of, whatever it might be. Pleasure is inherently something that is very necessary. But in many people's lives, it is the first thing that they're willing to sacrifice and let go of. And that is my number one thing that I love to challenge people on is, are you experiencing pleasure at all? And when I'm speaking of pleasure, I'm not inherently just speaking of sexual energy. Of course, we typically can attribute pleasure to a sexual experience or some sort of a somatic or body experience. But pleasure can also be found in how we relate with the world around us. Pleasure can be brought into, you know, that rigid business meeting that we're a part of, or that, you know, corporate conversation, whatever that might be, you can still be in a state of pleasure. And, you know, in the traditional business framework, it is not something that is typically welcome, right? They want you to just be in this kind of framework and to just get the job done and do things a certain way, which you can still do all of that in a state of pleasure, but they don't identify it. It's typically avoided. And one of my theories behind why pleasure is so frequently avoided is because it is inherently tied back into the unification of your masculine and feminine energies. And so much of our world has been built on this binary construct of suppressing the feminine and letting the masculine be too dominant and all of that stuff. So when we become more unified and embodied and realizing that, yes, we do have our duality of our masculine and feminine energy, when we actually welcome both those elements of ourself into whatever it is that we're creating or doing, then we allow that pleasure to come forth tenfold. And it's just a really powerful experience that we can experience in our lives.
What are some, like, I guess, socially acceptable forms of pleasure in the business setting that you recommend that more companies adopt?
Mm-hmm. One of the first things that I love to invite people to is to tune into their breath before they go into a meeting. Your pleasure can be found by the simple act of breathing and breathing with intention. So sometimes you might even want to make a gentle sound as you exhale, right? Just that nice inhale, you breathe in your life force. And then as you exhale, it's just that little, a little bit of something. And typically, you know, you can do that in any environment that you're in. That's one of the easiest ways to invite pleasure into your body and into whatever connection or conversation you're having. Another way that we can invite a bit more pleasure into ourselves is through tuning into our sensory experience. So that, you know, that is a very foundational aspect of being human, is that you are able to see, you're able to hear, you're able to smell, you're able to taste, and you're able to touch. And when we bring in our sensory awareness, it allows us to actually come back into our body. It helps us come back to the center. And it's that centerpiece, that embodiment of yourself, that is a state of pleasure inherently. So those are two pieces. If I'm to think of something else that might be a little bit more practical for you, is to really just acknowledge that I am a being of pleasure. Just simply remind yourself, I am able to experience pleasure in this moment. I don't need a hard, fast rule of what that needs to look like, but I can command it and call it forth in my body, right? And it's setting that really clear affirmation for yourself because, you know, the universe only hears I am statements. So if you are choosing to say that I am not in pleasure, that's a choice you're making. But you can also make the same choice in saying, I am in pleasure. And that can even be applied to, you know, uncomfortable situations or more corporate, rigid, you know, conversations or meetings or interactions. You can still make that choice to claim within your own body that I am showing up to this situation from a state of pleasure. I am choosing pleasure for myself. And that's something that you don't even need to make a little sigh and an exhale about. That can be an internal conversation and an internal choice and declaration that you make for yourself.
Hmm. Do you think that because our society is so achievement oriented, but they don't really encourage people to take pleasure in your achievements, it's always like, oh, one after the next, and then they never really let themselves enjoy the moment, so then they end up feeling, I guess, maybe even depressed after they achieve what they want to do. What's your take on that?
Mm-hmm. So once again, this idea of moving so fast that there's always something else. If we continue to repeat that pattern and we don't create even a brief moment to celebrate that victory, to celebrate that accomplishment, if we don't allow that space, then we're actually addicted to pain.
Mm.
We're actually addicted to a cycle of keeping ourselves outside of our body, right? And so that is very, very common. And we see it happen in many places. It's like, great, you did the job. Now here's another three things to do. It's like, but wait, can we maybe just like, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, you don't have to go out to dinner and have a big celebration. It's like, can we actually just celebrate with each other? Can we just have a brief moment and like say, yeah, like we did that thing. We accomplished that goal. You know, it doesn't have to be this big celebratory experience. It can be very brief, right? Can you make eye contact with the people that you were part of that project with? And can you acknowledge each other and say, hey, good for you. Like you did it. Way to go. Congratulations. Or if it's a project that you have done for yourself and there's nobody else involved, can you create an opportunity for yourself to say, way to go. You know, you accomplished that. And from that place, it's that brief moment of experiencing the pleasure of what you achieved. And then of course, you're able to pursue and move on to other goals and aspirations or things that you have planned for yourself. But I think that's the number one thing that we need to remember is just to make a brief moment of pause and reprieve to say, congratulations, you did it.
Nice. What about like the other extreme? Like, let's say someone is all about pleasure, like, oh, having fun this week and next week, and that's all they think about, and that's their main focus, and then the other three pillars might go down the wayside. What mm-hmm. should they do, and what do you suggest to them?
Mm-hmm. If you catch yourself in a narrative that's trying to fill one of these spaces more than the other, inherently, some of us maybe do gravitate to some more than the other, but once again, there's a reason why it starts off as claiming that inner power, discovering potential, moving into purpose, and then activating pleasure. Because if we're so fixated on pleasure, typically pleasure in that context is going to be filling a void within yourself by external means outside of yourself. And anytime that there's that dissonance, we're once again moving into an addictive tendency or an addictive mindset, right? Anytime that we think that, okay, I just have to be in a pleasure state all the time, you're actually bypassing another aspect of your human experience, which is not being in a state of pleasure, right? It's kind of that paradox. We need to experience moments of not being in pleasure to then when we receive that pleasure, we really can feel it. We can really enjoy that moment. And I attribute it to kind of the old days, you know, before this big global shift we're all experiencing. You know, the person that worked 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, that's all they did. And they went home every day and they cooked their meals and they walked their dog and they just lived that life for 5 days. And then for the weekend, they were the weekend warrior that just tried to, you know, cram in as much pleasure as possible, whether it be through partying or socializing and going out to dinner events and doing this and doing that and being so hyper-stimulated and then crashing and falling back into that 5-day cycle of just repeating the cycle over and over. When we're in a process like that, what is very apparent is that we're actually not experiencing pleasure ever. We're actually just trying to balance out one extreme to the other. And anytime that we're trying to fill that void or anytime we're trying to escape, once again, typically in that example I just shared with you, the true essence of pleasure is really hard to achieve, right? Because maybe you can still be in that 5-day work week, but you get home, you make your dinner, you walk your dog, and then you have a brief moment. You have 20 minutes where you massage your body or you put on music that you really enjoy and you move and you enjoy and you do something that brings you into a state of pleasure. And that's a lot more embodied. And then, you know, in the weekend experience, maybe you do have a night of socializing and maybe there's a little bit of party energy and you're having your fun, but then you make time in one of those days to find pleasure in a different way. You go out into nature or you phone a family member that you haven't talked to in a long time, and you try to just ask yourself, what are some other ways that pleasure can be experienced in my body outside of this framework of trying to fill a void or trying to balance energies when they're not in alignment fully?
So you're saying that ideally the four pillars should be balance at all times, so they should be balanced at all times, right?
I think when we think of the word balance, you know, for myself, I love the idea that there'd be 25% into power and 25% into potential and all that. The reality is that's not going to be the case. Anytime that we try to fixate into the perfection of balance is when we actually become the most imbalanced. Mm-hmm. So you really have to use that gift of discernment again to know, where am I holding myself? Where am I giving my energy to? And every person's idea of balance is going to be a little bit different. Why? Because you are the only you in this universe. Nobody else knows of that internal conversation you have with yourself. Nobody knows the full scope of your life story, of your experience, of what your body needs. You are the only person that knows that for yourself. And of course, we have external influence all around us, and they can be, you know, that external influence can act as a guide, can act as a reminder. There can be opportunities to do some self-check in that. But ultimately, no, it isn't about trying to create balance between those four pillars. It's about being aware that it's a framework that you can move through as a journey, right? And if we're looking at the river, maybe you're going to ride from the power to the potential to purpose and to pleasure. And then maybe you're going to get very fixated in the pleasure, and then you got to go back and you got to remind yourself of your purpose a bit. Or maybe it's going to kick you back to the power state and you're going to be like, whoa, where did I become disempowered here, right? Or you could also think of this as being a circle, similar to the wheel of life or different indigenous traditions there. Things move in cycles, things move in seasons, right? And so it's coming back and realizing, just because you accessed your purpose and you moved into your pleasure doesn't mean that you're not going to have to visit your power again, right? So maybe there's a bit more of a cycle energy to that framework.
Very insightful. Wow. So much good wisdom you're sharing. Thank you so much. I would like to step back and get a better understanding of who you were before you acquire all this wisdom and do what you do now. And yeah, where would you like to start? Like, how did this journey start for you?
Oh, this journey is a fun journey, and it's still nowhere near completion. Thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So this journey started from a place of being very small. I was somebody who was so scared of myself, who was afraid of my sexuality, who was afraid of how I was showing up in the world. And I wasn't given healthy frameworks from an early age, right? My parents did the best that they could with the knowledge and information they had available to them. And I was welcomed into, you know, different worldly mindsets as well as different religious mindset. And there was a lot of confusion in my formative years. And through my journey and through the process, there was a lot of hardship. And, you know, I battled a lot of intense depression and anxiety. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said that that didn't exist to this day, because inherently that's part of my formative self. There is still that energy of, you know, feeling the energy of depression or feeling the energy of anxiety. But instead of collapsing into it, I recognize now that it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to nurture that inner child, to bring forth that inner parent, to just love and care for that side of myself. And a lot of my upbringing was very confused, right? I was raised in the world where we were just on the threshold of having, you know, queer ancestry, you know, be acknowledged and queer identity coming into the mainstream culture. I was kind of part of that last generation of people who were really shamed and blamed and persecuted. And of course, all of that is still happening to this day. We're still in this journey of loving each other again. But for me, I really did struggle with that. There was a huge piece for me there. And in my experience, how I came to kind of rise up out of this was really experiencing a lot of intense hardship and learning and allowing space and time to heal wounds, to not expect anyone else to do the work for me. I had to make a conscious choice many times over to say, nobody else is going to do this for me. I have to make that choice for myself to heal and to tap into different modalities or to maybe change up my social circle, to, you know, expand my expression, to get curious, to be willing to get messy and to make mistakes and to ultimately to be human. I had to really make that choice for myself many times over. And still to this day, I have to make that conscious choice to be human, to get messy, to learn the hard way once in a while, to realize that I'm constantly learning. And, you know, part of this really came to a head in my own personal life when an extreme situation took place. And this was in November of 2016, when my father did not just die, but he was actually killed by another individual. And it was in a different country than what I am currently residing in Canada. It took place in Mexico. And that set forth a huge awakening process where it didn't matter any of the modalities I had studied. It didn't matter any of the, you know, experiences I had, you know, welcomed into that point. The moment that that event took place was the moment that I really had to make some big choices for myself. Am I going to choose to collapse in this trauma and to live in pain and suffering for the rest of my life? Or am I going to take hold of this still experienced trauma, but realize that there is a diamond in the dust in this? And it wasn't always easy. There still is a lot of layers to it. But that was my personal catalyst point, was having to experience and navigate this incredible hardship. And in that journey, and as I still continue to move through that healing, there's always more opportunities to learn more about myself, to once again come back to what my power is, to come back to what my potential is, what is my purpose, and then how can I begin to experience my pleasure, right? So that is kind of a really light synopsis of how I've come to be who I am today. And it's a journey that is constantly unfolding. Right. Before we jumped on this podcast, we were talking about, you know, how the last few weeks have been a bit more of a shadow state. There's been, you know, I was presented a catalyst in my life where I had to actually look at the spiral, right? I was, instead of being in an upward spiral and creating and experiencing a lot of joy and wonder in my life, that energy shifted and I started to move through a bit of a downward spiral. And I had to once again look at these different pieces and chapters of my life and feel the pain and move through trauma healing and move through grieving processes, not even just tied to my dad, but to my childhood, to feeling like I'm not fully expressed in my identity, to various elements. And I had to just sit with that and really hold it and love it. And that is something that just happened, right? It just started to turn over the last few days. And so thank goodness, because now I'm able to show up in a bit more of a neutral and vulnerable state in this podcast with you all. So, you know, part of my life journey is something that, despite all the hardship, despite any joy and bliss and amazing ecstasy and trauma and dense shadow, all of that, I'm still here. I'm still human and I'm still learning, just like we all are. So that's me.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's powerful stuff. Dang. I'm actually quite curious about what were some of the practical steps you took after you found out what happened to your dad to heal and get to this stage, as opposed to going to the other end of the spectrum.
You know, part of my life before this event happened was testing the extremes. And I'm really grateful that that was a part of my previous life. I tested the extremes in many places. I went into extreme religion. I was going to 5 churches at one point and 5 days a week. And I was so indoctrinated into the faith and spirituality of that. And then I 180'd and I went to the extreme of rejecting all of that and consuming and escaping my reality and really trying to just find myself in the world. And I really went through this chapter of my life of experiencing extremes. So when that event took place with my father, I knew that I could easily go back to that. I could easily escape everything that I possibly wanted. And I could choose to consume substance, or I could choose to, dive into a career and forget everything tied to my emotional self. And I could go into some sort of extreme response. But I knew, because of my previous life experience, that that was actually me deflecting. That was me bypassing the true healing that was really asking to come through in this experience. And as I navigated that, you know, intense tragedy and intense trauma, it wasn't easy. Of course, there were seasons where I tried my best to escape, and I had, you know, times of maybe drinking one too many bottles of wine, or, you know, shutting myself down and watching Netflix for 4 days straight. And, you know, but that's also part of trauma healing. Sometimes our bodies become so overstimulated that we do need to just shut down. Or, you know, if I'm to reflect back now in this moment, there were times that my body actually just got sick. You know, I just got sick because my nervous system was so stimulated that my body on a physical level said, enough's enough. Here's your time out. But due to the nature and the position that I held in reconciling my father's death, it wasn't just a personal process. I was also responsible for a lot of matters. So, you know, I was the executor and the administrator of the estate. I was the person that made the choice to represent my father in the international murder trial. I was the person that moved through and made a lot of those choices to do my best to reconcile and to bring justice for my father. And, you know, my family did what they could. They did what they could to support me. But that's a different part of the story that I don't need to share today. But in that experience, there were times that I just took big pauses, but then I knew that I always had to kind of step up, keep moving forward, and keep coming back to my healing journey. And that was really a huge testament of me discovering my own resiliency and me remembering that I am an incredibly powerful person, but I'm still human. And that feels complete to share with you in this moment, to just kind of open up that space with you. So
thank you for sharing that. So from what you're saying, it sounds like through that experience that kind of led you to your purpose today, would you say?
Yeah, it's definitely been a huge aspect of me beginning to remember my purpose. My purpose is still evolving at this point. I'm still healing and reconciling that chapter of my life. There's still some pieces in the legalities and in the, the justice system and the structure of it that still aren't resolved, you know, and that's nearly 4.5 years later. So yes, it has helped me remember aspects of my purpose, but I am still remembering some aspects of my purpose even to this day.
And what would you consider your purpose to be today?
Mm-hmm. Part of the purpose that I am here in this moment and embodying in today is to help other people embody their true essence, to help people remember who they are and why they are here, and how that purpose comes through in tangible forms is through offering sessions to people, through creating different packages and coaching, you know, opportunities, through bringing people through intuitive psychic guidances and insights, through facilitating trainings for people to move into their Reiki trainings or their energetic mastery, through helping queer men discover their sexual power, through many different streams. But it ultimately, to distill all of that back down, is to help people remember their essence and to embody their essence.
What was like your first modality that you learned and offered that gave you the confidence to keep going with this purpose? Yeah, I have this gift and I should pursue it. What was that for you?
Yeah, so the first one for me was yoga. So I went to an alternative school for high school, and part of our physical education or our gym class was hot yoga. And so that was the first thing that I discovered for my own personal body. The first modality that I was certified and trained through was Reiki, and it was the Asui Reiki lineage. And I received my Reiki mastery by the time I was 19 years old. And then from that point, I worked with it, I played with it. And then from that point, as I worked with my Reiki attunements for a few years, I then went and I went back into yoga and I received my yoga certifications. And so those were kind of the first few modalities. And then from there, many others came through.
And through those, through Reiki and yoga, you offered it to your first few groups or clients, and then someone just clicked like, oh yeah, this is for me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, there was something there. I remember teaching yoga classes, and not just teaching, you know, a traditional hatha flow movement based class, but actually creating series. You know, one of the first series I created was the chakra yogas. And so each class, for 8 classes, it was moving through your chakras or your energy centers and working with the energy of your body through movement and through breath work and meditation. And, you know, and as I started to create these classes and these different workshops and offerings, there was something in me that really clicked. And at the time, I was attending university for classical music, and I loved it. And I thought I was really going to pursue that and move into music therapy. But, you know, through that journey, I came to realize that I actually had a lot more entrepreneurial inspiration. And I was discovering that through teaching classes and through hosting one-on-one sessions with people. And, you know, when I look back at that time, it was like, oh, I was such a, you know, a little boy. I was such a curious person, you know, but people were really resonating with what I was doing. And, you know, it was really beautiful to witness people move through their own personal transformation. And that was really kind of what inspired me to keep pursuing it, to keep looking at the potential of this being something that I do.
Fascinating. So as you progressed and started mastering more of these modalities and gain more wisdom, but I guess society hasn't quite advanced as much, like yoga is like the what most people would understand, but maybe a lot of the things you're doing now might seem a bit too abstract for them. So like, how do you bridge the disconnect, and what do you say to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for asking that question. It's really important. One of the biggest things that I've learned in the last couple of years is to make as much of this information as accessible as possible. And, you know, even in this podcast, there may have been some words that I used that didn't quite make sense, but, you know, there's two sides of this. The one side is to use a little bit more abstract language to kind of push and expand, you know, the threshold of what people know and understand, right? When I first started practicing Reiki, that was a very taboo word. And now, you know, just over 10 years later, we see Reiki clinics. We see Reiki practitioners working in the medical system alongside doctors, right? And so it's a really fascinating thing to realize that we are evolving, that we are growing together. But one of the ways that I have learned for myself to really bring this forth and to make it, useful to people is to become as accessible as possible. And when we are looking at kind of this topic of mastery, I love this metaphor in that if you are unable to teach something to a child, you have not yet mastered it. You have not yet figured out how to teach it properly. And so the more that I learn about this, right? This is why when we're looking at the four pillars, for example, those are very accessible words. Most people can understand what at least those first three are. Maybe pleasure is kind of that little bit of a taboo word, right? But those are words that most of us can understand inherently on some level, right? We might have a different definition of them, but there is accessibility there. So that's been my number one practice personally, is to simplify it as much as I can, to actually make it fun and enjoyable too, right? Don't get me wrong. I love going into the woo-woo and talking all crazy. And, you know, that's something that lights me up. But that's not the only thing that lights me up. I also really love talking to even kids, like literally talking to children, being like, hey, did you know, like if you rub your hands together, like, can you feel that heat? Guess what? That's energy, right? And trying to distill that higher intelligence or that wisdom, quote, unquote, that we attribute this stuff to, and to just make it, you know, fun and enjoyable and something that we can all kind of understand on some level.
Yeah, I think you're doing a fantastic job on that. Like throughout this whole podcast, everything you're saying is like, oh, so easy to understand. But what you're saying is also so complex and abstract too. So you go by the name Divya Ra. Can you tell us more about what that name means and how did you get that name?
All right. So we said we're not going to go into too much woo-woo, but apparently here we go. So Divya Ra is my soul name. It is a name that found me, that came back to me in this lifetime through a series of remembrances that I experienced. So I received the name Divya in July of 2016. So this was a few months before my father died. And prior to July 2016, there was about a year process where I was really starting to deepen my own spiritual practice, where I was doing a lot of, you know, yoga, meditation, body work, energy work. I was working with people, teaching those yoga classes. And I was also finding mentors. And I was being presented through, you know, what we might call as synchronicities or kind of miracle moments where certain people were coming into my life and playing really powerful roles. And that was when I was first really introduced to things like past life regressions or different kind of shamanic energy healing work. And there was a series of events that took place, and more or less, you know, how Divya came through. There was, you know, glimmers of this new name kind of coming in for a couple of months. And actually, when I was practicing a lot of Kundalini yoga, we have what is called in the Kundalini lineage, it's kind of receiving your Sanskrit name or your Kundalini name. And my name at that time, and this was long before all the controversy with Kundalini yoga, but the name that I received through that was Devdaram. And, you know, I looked at those two names. Devdaram Singh was the full name. And what that meant was the lion who walks with courage and grace, inspiring everyone as I go. But something didn't quite feel right with Devdaram. And I couldn't claim that name. It felt like I was, you know, culturally appropriating. It didn't feel right. There was something not in alignment there. And so then in one of my personal meditations, I received the name Devma. And Devma was the combination of Devdaram coming together as one name. And I'll never forget it. I was at a festival in July of 2016, and I went around trying to introduce myself as Devma. And every time I said that name, people were saying, Dave, Devin, Derek, like, who are you? You know, and I was like, oh, this is so interesting. And I was like, that's my name. And that same weekend, so that was the very first time that I was introducing myself as Devma. And that same weekend, through a series of events, there is a woman there who one sunset evening channeled my Egyptian mother's lullaby to me. And she began to channel and speak in this different language. And then partway through, there was this song and it was this lullaby. And partway through the lullaby was Divaya. And there was just something that took place in my body. I could feel all of my energy shift from left to right and up and down, and something just locked in my heart. And I spoke out, my name is Divaya. Mm. And there was this powerful journey that came through. And for the rest of the summer, I began researching and I began finding that name in like ancient texts and different storylines. And I received a full remembrance. It's what we know as kind of our Akashic records, which is more or less kind of our whole soul story, right? Our whole story of where we've been in many lifetimes beyond this one. And I received my entire Akashic record, and I was able to trace myself back thousands of years. I was able to remember many different lifetimes and different memories and all of this stuff. And every single time, my name was Divaya. And for me, I've always felt very called and connected to the Egyptian civilization. It's been since an early age, in my early childhood years, I was very drawn to the pyramids. I didn't know what it was about. You know, I thought maybe it was just being fascinated with, you know, a culture that was so different than what, you know, we're living in currently. But in my process of remembering Divaya and claiming the name Divaya, I began to have very, very vivid past life remembrances of being in Egypt. And I began meeting other people who shared similar remembrances to me. And that's where the last name Ra came in. And so Divaya Ra is in essence this soul identity, it's a soul name. And what it actually means as well is Divaya breaks down to Dev and Aya. And Dev means spirit and Aya means bird. So it's the spirit of the winged ones connecting to life and all of creation. And that's what Ra is. Ra is the Egyptian deity, the sun god, how we typically know it as. But Ra was the Egyptian deity of all of life and all of creation. And so this is just, if you can believe it, this is a short version of the name Divaya Ra. There's many more stories I could share about that, but that is in essence how I received the name and what that name means. And ever since I've claimed it, it has been powerful. It has continued to show me many, many pieces of myself, my essence, and what I'm here to do in the world.
So do we all have our own soul name waiting to be discovered by us?
It's a very good question. Some people don't necessarily have a name that has been a part of, you know, every lifetime or a majority of lifetimes. Do I believe that most of us do have a name tied to our essence? Yes. Is that one fixed name? Not always. One of my soul sisters, her name is Phoenix currently. That has been her soul name. But over the last few years, she's been going through an evolution. Her soul has been growing. There's been many beautiful, growth points in her life. And that name Phoenix is beginning to change. It's beginning to transform, and it's moving into, you know, other names such as Amara, which is like the dove. So the Phoenix rising into the dove. And then recently it's even evolved into the name Aurora. So these aren't the typical kind of soul names, like maybe I say this very lightly and with a little bit of joke and candor that, you know, people that go around saying, my name is Sunflower, or my name is Rainbow Lollipop, whatever it may be, like, you know, there can be a lot of joy in just like changing your name and moving through some journeys. But these names that I'm speaking of come from a bit of a deeper place. They come from more of an ancient remembrance that happens. So I don't actually have a clear answer if we all have one or not. I do know many people who have discovered and remembered an essence of themselves. And even for myself, I can't say for certain that Devaya is going to be the name that I go by forever. But for the last, 4.5 years, it is the name that I've gone by, and it has radically transformed my personal life. And I still go by my birth name. So fun fact for y'all, my birth name is Daniel.
Oh,
it's a very normal name, Daniel. And I own it and I claim it, and I'm happy to be identified by that as well. But when given the opportunity, I introduce myself as Devaya.
Got it. Have you ever been to Egypt?
I sure have. So in December of 2018, my soul sister Phoenix and I, we organized a retreat, and we brought 12 people with us to a really powerful journey to Egypt. And it basically moved through the traditional initiation series that the ancient civilization went through. So it was experiencing different temples in a series in a different order. And it brought us into being inside the Great Pyramid in a private visitation and meditation on Christmas Day of December 2018. And there was a lot of intense, big spiritual energy work that happened in that trip. But when I arrived in Egypt, there was many of the temples that we went to where in this lifetime, I had never been there. It was my first time. But as soon as we arrived, I knew to walk down the corridor, turn right, go straight, turn left, and you'd end up in this chamber. And sure enough, that's exactly how the temple looked. Or, remembering, oh, if you just go off to this side, you're going to see this, thing, this statue is going to be there. And sure enough, every time, that's exactly what the temple looked like. So for me, it was a huge affirmation that those remembrances that I've had over the years in receiving Devaya are actually very true. Wow. Because I got to experience them in real time in Egypt.
So by knowing those directions, so back then you were some sort of like cleric level, right?
The easiest word that I would describe it as being is I was a messenger. Mm. So I helped create a lot in the Egyptian civilization.
Mm, very interesting. Cool. All right, I want to ask you, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when I ask you, what was the most important lesson you've ever learned?
The most important lesson that I've ever learned is how to forgive. And that lesson comes from many experiences in my life. And really understanding that the more that I've been able to forgive myself for actions that I've made, or to forgive others, the more space that I've created in my own life and in my own body to experience love and to experience joy. So that is the number one thing that I, have experienced, is the gift of forgiveness and how transformative it really can be.
It is, totally agree. And what is a book that changed your life?
Ooh, a book that changed my life.
Or so.
I mean, just trying to think of like a few tangible pieces here. The first one, the most recent one, is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. I am still reading it right now, actually. That is the most recent book that has like radically transformed me. Just really clear, really helpful. And I'd say the second book that comes to mind is The Essential Guide to Reiki, or any book to do with Reiki, and just getting other people's perspective on that modality and how we can work with it and how it can serve not only ourselves in our own healing practice, but how we can use that and work with other people.
Those
are the only two books that want to come through right now. Are the ones that are having the most impact in my reality right now. So,
cool, great. Thanks for sharing those. So let's naturally just go into the lightning round. Seems like the last two questions were kind of similar to these questions I'm going to be asking. So, what is one thing you like to do to relax?
Oh, dance.
Nice. What's one thing you like to do for fun?
Go outside. Yeah, experience nature.
Nice. What's one thing that makes you feel enthusiastic?
I love being connected with people and just experiencing that group energy makes me feel very enthusiastic.
Cool. What's one habit you always do?
One habit I always do. Ooh, I love coffee.
Nice. And what is one habit you are working on or would like to have?
A regular strengthening routine to develop more muscle in my body.
Cool. And if you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing?
Ooh, if I was not doing what I'm doing today, I would most likely still be working at the libraries and playing in that realm.
Interesting. How would you describe your ideal life?
Oh, my ideal life is just being supported by my passions, gifts, and skills, and watching other people become liberated in what they're here to do, and just witnessing people's success. And that in turn is my success.
So essentially what you're doing today, right?
More or less, yeah. This is exactly it. I'm living the life that I love.
That's awesome. And how do you define purpose?
Purpose is why you're here.
And lastly, do you have any requests you would like our listeners to do?
Please love more. Please find reasons to love more. Love yourself more. Create opportunity for you to experience love in your life, whether it be through friends or intimate relationships or loving yourself through self-care and honor, remembering your ancestry, loving your history and your her story, wherever you came from, and realizing and recognizing that we all have the opportunity to transform all of our fear into love.
Beautiful. Thank you. How should people reach you if they want to contact you?
Yeah. So if you would like to find me, I feel called to spell my name out. It's the easiest way. So Devaya is spelled DevAiya. So you can find me on all social channels with Devaya Ra. And my website is also devaya.com. And from that place, there's a whole bunch of resources that you can tune in with. So it's the easiest way to find me is through all of the social channels. And I really just invite you to jump on my email list as well, because I'm going to begin offering a lot of magic in that container.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to be adding all of those links to the show notes. Thank you so much for being a part of a Working Purpose podcast. You share so many amazing wisdom. Wow, that was incredible. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And may your work in progress continue to expand and a work in purpose continue to actualize and come through in so many wonderful ways.
Thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Devaya Rai and learned about how you can apply the four pillars of leadership, power, potential, purpose, and pleasure, so you can become the highest you are meant to be. Thank you for listening. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please also follow A Work in Purpose on Instagram and join our Facebook group. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and you are listening to A Work in Purpose.